This is Bloomberg Markets with Tim Fox and Lisa Abramowitz on Bloomberg Radio.
What to do with your money in 2017? Perhaps nothing, but maybe not. Maybe the dog of the Dow theory is the way to go. Let's find out from Doug Scioca. He is the chief executive officer and partner at Cavar Capital Partners, helping to manage a little bit more than $500 million. He's based in Leawood, Kansas. Doug, great to always speak with you. Dogs of the Dow. Why don't we start there? Because that may highlight why the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up nearly 14% this year, while the S&P 500 is up a little bit more than 10%.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for having me on, and Happy New Year. And I think it's been interesting. There seems to be a lot of tax loss selling that's taking place in certain sectors of the Dow and the S&P, but you know, whether it's in staples or healthcare and what we are calling the trailblazers of the changing face of retail, right? Those companies that focus on direct-to-consumer as opposed to same-store sales. Seems like some paradigm shifting has caused a little bit of consternation in certain sectors that we think offer some pretty good opportunity going into next year, right? So much of what we're trying to determine from an asset allocation perspective is, you know, what areas of the stock market have pulled forward the prospects of economic and earnings per share improvement ahead of it actually materializing. And
can you give us some details? Tell us some industry groups, particularly, I know, industrial stocks.
Well, industrial stocks, financials, and energy post-election have been on a parabolic scream higher, which is great. And I think that it is embedding some optimism that was dormant for a period of several years. And, you know, whether it's because that the Fed is going to have the green light and be buttressed by underlying economic growth, that it feels that it can raise rates progressively. And that's a very positive immediate impact for profitability of banks. What are this functional fiscal policy that we're hopeful will make its way through the legislative process is going to be great for industrial companies that have seen a pretty significant ebb in their order flow, or whether it's the energy stocks that now feel like, okay, shoot, the U.S., let's join OPEC. I mean, we've got enough natural gas. We've got enough energy. If Obama had coined himself the energy president and we've had all these discoveries, can Trump then get it effectively transported through pipelines where it can actually make a material improvement in the economy and bring back the whole manufacturing base that we feel may have been abandoned? So sectors.
I was really just going to say, Doug, just to break in on energy, I didn't know, I just recently learned this, that the United States is on a tap to pump about 8.8 million barrels of oil a day, correct? I mean, we're somewhere around there,
right?
Nine million. Now, but that was the level that it was about 2 years ago, because of course the price of oil having come down, a lot of wells have been shut in, and so on. But we're producing that amount of oil with a third of the number of rigs. So the technology, I mean, this just underscores the technology change that has gone on in the energy business.
Agree, and it's fascinating, and I think that was one of the reasons that the predictions when they were in place, you know, famously Dennis Gartman, I think in February, said oil would never be back to 40 in his lifetime, because it wasn't that there was a lack of demand. There was an ebullient amount of or an amazing amount of supply, and that supply was going to be drilled for and mined so efficiently that there would be no reason to see such upward pressure on prices at any point in the future. So, yeah, I think that plays a big part. And the technological progression and efficiency stretch is across industries, which is really interesting, as much as the technological and the innovative components are an offshoot of the tech industry, which has been one of the main laggards after the election because of this this theory that Trump hates tech because of a lack of very prominent.
Well, he certainly doesn't hate Twitter
during the campaign. No, he loves Twitter.
Yeah. So looking at, let's say you got an asset allocation model and you're saying to yourself, all right, now that I've made some gains in energy stocks, I've made some gains in industrials, financials, and I need to rebalance, right? This is my discipline. I'm going to rebalance my portfolio.
Right.
What do you have to add to do the rebalancing? You have to add more tech.
You need to have more tech, need to add more healthcare, and I think you have to double back on some of the staple stocks, no question. I mean, I think there is an overreaction in the market to some perceived threat of unwinding the globalization efforts that tech has really been the primary representation thereof. I think there are unfounded concerns about the restrictions on intellectual capital mobility for tech companies as well, with visa threat propositions and things of that nature that I actually think this is far more bark than it is bite. And I think for Trump to really extract the benefit of becoming the pro-economy president, he realizes that tech has to be a sidecar to that propulsion.
All right. So if you are unbalanced in your asset allocation, take a look at technology, take a look at healthcare, and also biotechnology, I would imagine, is part of that, no?
Within healthcare, I mean, everything throughout the vertical, Tim, as it relates to producing drugs, purchasing drugs, and consuming drugs, I mean, that vertical has been under assault, whether it starts with Martin Shkreli and then catapults forward with the EpiPen debacle, and then we're trying to understand what we're in the process of PBM really fits and who's really the
pharmacy
blame for
benefit
the
management companies.
Correct.
Yeah,
so
we were just talking.
Under
we were just. I believe we were just talking recently about United Health, and they have an Optum unit that accounts for about 40% of their profits, and that is basically a technology business, and it has a pharmacy benefit management division within that. Tell me about bonds. If you have gains in bonds, should you take them, or should you wait?
Well, if you have gains in bonds, then you probably had a very strong bond portfolio given the pullback in bond prices that's taken place over the last 6 or 7 weeks. We think there's a lot of opportunity in the fixed income market just because you had a pullback very similarly to what took place during the taper tantrum of 2013, but it has provided entry points that on a spread basis we've not seen really sustainably since maybe before the Great Recession. So we still think that, again, given that there's been some enthusiasm attended to these rips in some of these market sectors, it has been equal and offsetting with the drubbing that's taken place in some of these bond sectors. There's a lot of opportunity, almost like a dogs of the Dow theory in fixed income, particularly in tax exempts, where tax exempts have kind of been a double whammy in so much as people say, okay, rates are going up, so we got to get out of our current bonds as well as any bond surrogates, and taxes are going lower, so the benefit tangibly or quantitatively of that exemption is going to fall. So if you see that backup multiplied in the muni space, we still think that there's some very good value in there.
Thanks very much. Doug Sciocca is the chief executive and partner at Cavar Capital Partners, joining us from Leawood, Kansas. Coming up, we're going to talk about the economy of Washington, D.C. This is Bloomberg.